Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In Book 4 of Plato's Republic, he's going to provide us with an argument for there being what he terms parts of the soul, or psyche, the word, of course, that we get psychology from. And this is often called Plato's tripartite psychology, or his faculty psychology. And we're really looking here, we're interested primarily in the way that he argues towards saying that there's three main parts of the soul. And there's a couple different approaches that he's going to take in this section. He's kind of moving at it from different angles. The first thing that he talks about is the soul having three forms of virtue within it: wisdom, courage, and temperance being those. And he's basing this on the idea that the soul is going to have the same elements as the larger city that the soul, you know, is a person within, has as well. And putting aside those three virtues for a minute, there's something that he says here. He says, a just person will not differ at all from a just city in respect of the very form of justice, but will be like it. So in Plato's metaphysics, as we know, there are these things that we call forms or ideas, and they're out in an intelligible world. We grasp them with our minds, we refer to them, and we rely upon them to make sense out of similar things. So justice is a quality within the soul. It's also a quality within the city. And those qualities are copies of the form. They're not exactly the same. Justice in me isn't exactly the same as justice in you, and might be kind of weak in me or tarnished or not entirely there, and it might be better in you or vice versa, but they're all copies of that thing out there that we call the form. Let's say you reject that. Let's say you're not convinced of Plato's doctrine of the forms. Plato has another good argument here, and he says, listen, the city is composed of the individual people who are its citizens. You're not going to have temperance within the city without having temperate citizens. And what does it mean to be a temperate citizen? It means to have temperance within you as a virtue. And so presumably these three very important virtues that have been identified as belonging to the particular classes or elements of the city, wisdom for the rulers, courage for the lesser guardians or auxiliaries, and temperance for everybody, but particularly the craftspeople, since they have the most opportunity to be intemperate. These are also going to be within the soul. And that's not a bad argument, but it doesn't actually get us three parts of the soul necessarily here. And so Socrates goes on and he provides another argument that's quite interesting here. He says, the matter begins to be more difficult when you ask whether we do all these things, all the things that we do with our being, with the same thing, or whether there are three things and we do one thing with one and one with another. So does the soul have different things or parts or functions that we do different things with? What would be the prime examples here? Well, he tells us, maybe we learn with one part of ourselves. Maybe we feel anger, or translating it properly, feel thumos with another, and with a third desire, the pleasures of nutrition and generation and their kind. Nutrition is eating, generation is having sex, right? And we can think of other pleasures as well. So do we have a part that does the thinking, the learning, all of that, and then a part that gets riled up is another great way of translating thumos, and a part that desires, you know, creature comforts and things that we've learned to become attracted to? Does the soul use those parts to do those things? Are those the functions of those parts of the soul? Or does the soul as a whole do all these things? And so Socrates here brings in a consideration, which is, you know, in some respects, not just metaphysical, but logical. And he says, let's attempt to define the boundary. It's obvious the same thing will never do or suffer opposites in the same respect, in relation to the same thing, and at the same time. What do we have there? Law of non-contradiction, right? And expressed in a very good way. Sometimes people are like, you can't have A and not A at the same time. Well, sometimes you can. That's why we have to have in the same respect and in orientation to the same thing, right? I can be angry at one person and yet loving to another person, if we think those are opposites in some way, at the same time, right? But it's different people. So Socrates is saying, when we find a contradiction like that, an opposition, we know we must be dealing with two different and distinguishable things. So he says, we'll know it's not the same thing functioning, but a plurality. So, and he says, you know, let's consider a few cases. Can the same thing be in rest and at motion? He says, now let's put aside stuff about tops where the center of the top is not in motion seemingly, and the outside of the top is in motion. Actually, the center of the top is in motion too. It's just spinning in a circle, smaller circle as well. When we look at the soul, some examples that he has that are quite nice here. He says, will you not set down as opposed to one another assent and dissent, and the endeavor after a thing to rejection of it, embracing to repelling? Do not all these and things like these belong to the class of opposite actions or passions? They are, in fact, opposites to each other. So, you know, when, for example, the mind or the rational part is assenting to something, it's not going to dissent to that same thing in the same way, et cetera, right? Same thing with deciding that we ought to go after it, literally to try to get it, or rejecting it, or embracing things or repelling them. And we don't have to get too hung up on the terminology here. The point is, when there's opposites within a particular function, it's only going to be doing one or the other of those at the same time. So what is the upshot of this? Well, we can think about certain desires. He says, shall we say the desires constitute a class, meaning appetites when he says desires, and the most conspicuous members of that class are what we call thirst and hunger. We could also put sexual appetite in there as well, or, you know, the appetite to lay around and do nothing all day might fit in there. And he goes on and he talks about, you know, distinctions that we can make of quantity and goodness with all of this. And then he talks about the sciences or forms of knowledge. This is all sort of rehearsal, getting us ready to see a fundamental bifurcation within the human soul. And what's the dividing line between them? He says, okay, let's go back to thirst. Will you class it with the things that are of something and say it is what it is in relation to something, and drink is of a certain kind, so is the thirst, but thirst that is just thirst is neither of much or little or good or bad, etc., etc. The soul of the thirsty, insofar as it thirsts, wishes nothing else than to drink and yearns for this, and its impulse is towards this. Now, why is he doing all of that? Well, we want to just consider thirst as a type of appetitive desire on its own. Are there times where we feel thirst and we really do, you know, part of our soul is saying, go get that drink of water right there, and we keep ourselves from doing it? We maybe say, this is not the right time for me to go to the drinking fountain and get a drink. I need to keep working over here. Or I've already had some water, I'm still thirsty, but it would be bad for me to drink the water at this time because I should, you know, allow the water that I've got to get into my system, whatever it happens to be. And the answer is yes. There's another part of ourself that says, don't drink the water. So he says right here, if anything draws it back when thirsty, this must be something different from that which thirsts. What is the thing that thirsts? What we call the appetite. The appetitive part, epithumia in Greek. So he says, that which thirsts and drives it like a beast to drink, it cannot be, we say, that the same thing with the same part of itself at the same time acts in opposite ways about the same thing. So what we have in this very simple example is one part saying, get the water, drink it up. And then the other part saying, no, don't do that. One part is pushing us. One part is saying no to that and pulling us away. Those must be different parts, because the same one single thing doesn't have this capacity to tell us different things at the same time with respect to the same object in the same way. So we have two parts. What are those two parts? The appetitive, epithumatic part, the part that has all these desires, eat, drink, have sex, do all sorts of other things that feel good, avoid things that feel bad. And then the rational part, the part that does the thinking, the part that says, you know, I know you don't like to exercise, and you've already walked a mile, and you're kind of huffing and puffing and tired, but why don't you keep going some more? Because that would be good for your body and your cardiovascular system, because we don't want to die young, right? That, the appetitive part doesn't do that. The appetitive part just follows what feels good and avoids what feels bad. The rational part is the part that keeps us safe by saying, here's the plan. Here's what we want to do. And it can oppose itself to desire. Sometimes it loses, sometimes it wins. Kind of depends on how you condition those parts. So far, so good. We've got two parts to the soul now, right? Two different things going on. So he says, not unreasonably, we shall claim that there's two and different from each other, naming in the soul where that whereby it reckons and reasons the rational, and that with which it loves, hungers, thirsts, and feels the flutter and titillation of other desires. Wonderful phrase there. The irrational and appetitive companion of various repletions and pleasures. Now, is that all to the story? Some faculty psychologies do have that. There's a rational part and an irrational part. The Platonic tripartite psychology, I mean, the word tripartite kind of gives it away, doesn't it? Says that there's three parts to the soul and that there's a second irrational part to the soul in addition to the appetitive part. How do you get that? Same way. So he says, these two forms, let us assume to have been marked off. But what about the thumos, this part of us that we feel courage in, that we get angry with, the principle of high spirit or passion as it's often translated? By the way, there is no good translation in English of thumos. We just have to stick with what we've got, right, and understand what's being said. He says, is this a third part or would it be identical with one of these? If it was going to be identical, it sure wouldn't be with the rational part, because are you rational when you're angry? I mean, you think that you are, but you're not. Is it identical then with the appetitive, the irrational part? No, it's a separate irrational part. How do you know? So he gives one example here, but we could come up with many others. He talks about this guy, Leontius, who is on his way from the Piraeus, this port under the outer side of the northern wall, becoming aware of dead bodies that lay at the place of public execution, at the same time felt a desire to see them. His eyes, you know, he has this desire to look at the corpses, and yet a repugnance or aversion, and for a time he resisted and veiled his head, but overpowered in despite by his desire, with wide staring eyes, he rushed up to the corpses and cried to his eyes, there, ye wretches, take your fill of the fine spectacle. He's ticked off with himself. He's angry with his eyeballs, which is really, you know, an extension of the appetitive part of his soul in this case, for wanting to look at the gross dead corpses. So, in that case, in other cases too, where thumos can make us do something different than what the desires want, like when we do get angry, say with other people, and we do risky stuff that our desires say don't do, or things that are painful for us, we have a conflict between two fundamental types of desire, thumos and epithumia. Passion or spirited part in English is how we translate it, and the appetitive part. So now we know that we have three different distinct parts to the soul. And where is Plato going to go from here? He's going to associate these different virtues with the different parts of the soul, but we don't have to go into that here because we're primarily just looking at how does he get there to be three parts altogether. This is the argument that he provides. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.